The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
And good afternoon, Bay Area. Here it is, the second show of my return to radio. Your host, estate planning attorney Bob Bergman in San Jose, California. I hope you stay with me for the next 50 minutes or so as we go through the show today. I want to lead off by reporting some news. Good news if you, like me, are one of the people that thinks that the bad aspects of Proposition 19 should be overturned. Well, the Howard Jarvis Tax Initiative people have extended the date to receive signed statements to for the petition to get this on the November ballot. The new deadline, instead of being tomorrow, is now postmarked by February 5th of this year. And what I'm going to tell you is, you can either go look that up, or if you want to, you can go straight to my website at lawbob.com. And in the menu, you will actually see in the menu that I have a menu item that specifically addresses this. It's a menu item that says Repeal Prop 19. And if you click on that, it tells you what it's all about. And then it gives you links where you can download, print, sign, and then return the petition. They're trying to get 1.3 million signatures before this goes forward. And if they're successful, it will be on the November 2024 ballot, which means there'll be more than just a presidential election on the ballot. There will be a proposition on the ballot to return our property taxes for homeowners and others to what they were before Proposition 19 went into effect. And I bring this up because I think this is a very, very important thing that we're trying to do here, which is to get this reversed. If you are not aware of what happened back, it's been like over 3 years ago, a ballot initiative appeared on the ballot, Proposition 19, and the proponents of Proposition 19 basically only told you, meaning told you the public, the first half of Proposition 19. Now, the first half of Proposition 19 said, hey, let's let senior citizens, meaning over 55, let's let them sell their home anywhere in the state of California and then go to anywhere else in the state of California and bring their property tax base with them. So if they had low property taxes because they'd been in the house a long time, they could bring the low property taxes to a new property in another part of the state, anywhere else in the state. Now, that was already in place for many counties. Many of the larger counties permitted that. But many of the smaller counties did not permit you to do that because they didn't have a large property tax base. Remember, property taxes pay for things like, schools, and also fixing things in a county. They cover a lot of things that they pay for, sewers and water and everything else under the sun. Well, that was the first half of Prop 19, and it basically said, if you're a senior, you can do this as many times as you want. You could move to another part of the state every 2 years if you wanted to. So people thought, oh, well, that seems fair. Seniors should be able to, like, move to be closer to their children and grandchildren without having to take a big hit on their property taxes. The second half of Proposition 19, however, stated, we're going to completely throw out the rules concerning the sales of a personal residence and other real estate owned by somebody when they die. Wait, what are you talking about, Bob? Well, this is the deal. Prior to Proposition 19, if you owned a residence here in the state, you could pass that residence on to one or more of your children, and in some cases, grandchildren, without the property taxes being reassessed. So if you'd owned a house for a long time and then died and passed it on to your kids, they could keep the property and keep the low property taxes so they wouldn't end up being perhaps priced out of being able to live in the parents' home. At the same time, you were able to pass on $1 million of assessed value of other real estate to your children. Okay? So that could be rental properties that you'd own for a long time. Proposition 19, though, said, hey, all those rental properties, no exclusion from reassessment, 100% reassessed when you die. Okay? So if you'd owned it a long time, you might see the property taxes for your family go up by 200, 300, 500, 1,000% over what you were paying. For your residence, they said, well, you can pass on your residence up to $1 million of market value of your residence added to your property tax valuation when you die. And but that's only if one or more of your children move into and occupy the residence within the year after you die. But it's even worse than that. The law says that you have to file with the county that you've occupied the residence as your personal residence within a year after death. Well, unfortunately, if a property has to go through the probate process, it might take more than a year before you could actually have it transferred to the child who's going to live there, maybe has been living there all along. And now many counties take the position that the law says 1 year from the date of death, if you don't file the necessary forms within 1 year from the date of death, you lose the exclusion. Is that fair? Absolutely not. But it's a crummy law with crummy results. And so the repeal Prop 19, repeal the death tax, because it is a death tax. You can access it through my website at lawbob.com. Look for repeal Prop 19 and follow the instructions there. And it will take you to where you can download the petition. You can fill it out. You can fill it out for yourself and send it in. Make sure to follow the instructions explicitly on how it has to be filled out and where it has to be filled out. Don't mix people from different counties. You can put up to two names on it. And even if you put yourself on there, you have to fill out as the person submitting the form. But if you have friends in different counties or family in different counties, make sure they fill out their own forms and put their counties down on the form. Spread the word. Direct people to my website at LawBob, and they can find out more about it there. This is an all-hands-on-deck situation. And I know many of you out there probably have at least a family home that you'd want to make sure that it can go to your kids even if they're not going to live in it, that they could keep it as a rental property or keep it as a house where the family could come back to where they were raised and keep it as a rental, or even just keep it vacant so it's a place where the family can come when they come want to come and visit the Bay Area or beyond. That's what this is all about. And I'm hoping that you will do this, you'll follow through, and you'll get those things downloaded, get them filled out, and send them back. Make sure they're postmarked by February 5th of this year. So this is the end of the first segment. This is Attorney Bob Berman, Plan Your Estate Radio. I'll talk with you more after the break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the second segment of the show today. If you're just now joining, I'm Attorney Bob Bergman. I'm an estate planning attorney in San Jose. And the first part of the show, I was letting people know that the petition to repeal Proposition 19 can be accessed through my website at lawbob.com. Go there, go to the menu, click on the link to repeal Prop 19. It will give you information about the petition and then a direct link to the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, where you can download all the information in order to get this in. The deadline to submit signatures is February 5th, so we have a little bit of time. It has to be postmarked by the 5th. But go there, download it, get it out now. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your coworkers. Just one thing, one caution, you have to be a registered voter in the state. So if you haven't registered to vote, maybe now it's time to register. So if you're not a U.S. citizen, you're not registered to vote, which is kind of goes hand in hand, unfortunately, you can't fill this out. But still, if you are, talk to everybody you know that is. Now, one of the things, my show actually went for 5 years and ended March of last year. And this is the Plan Your Estate Radio version 2.0, as I've come back here in 2024, after 5 years on the air, ending in March of 2023. Since that time, I've added some new things in my practice that I think might be of interest to many of you out there in my listening audience. The main thing I added is that I now have on-demand webinars that can be accessed through my website. Now, the main webinar that I have available is called the Living Trust Webinar, Inheritance Planning for You and Your Family. It's basically a webinar version of the live Living Trust seminar that I've done several times over the years. It's an overview of estate planning in California, and it's designed for individuals and couples, those with or without children. There's some emphasis on married couples because they have more planning options than individuals do. Now, the Living Trust webinar comes in two varieties. There is the regular one, and then there is also the Living Trust webinar with subtitles. So if you're like me, have a little bit difficulty hearing sometimes and seeing subtitles helps. I mean, that's how I watch most streaming services, is with subtitles. It enhances the experience of watching for me. Plus, I can also watch with the sound down if I don't want to disturb family or others around me if I'm out and around somewhere. So that's the Living Trust webinar. And then the other one is called Estate Planning for Busy Parents. And this is specifically designed for individuals and couples who have minor children, such as I do. In my case, I actually have twin daughters, and they are minors. They're 15 right now. They're going to be turning 16 in April. Woohoo! Neither one of them actually have any interest in learning how to drive a car or get a license. That seems to be a thing nowadays with this current generation of kids. But I can tell you that having minor children, those of you out there who have minor children, since I'm going through it right now and still in the middle of it, I can tell you, if you come work with me, I feel your pain, and I feel your joy, and I feel your confusion and all the other things that go with being a parent of minor child or children. So that particular one is aimed directly at those who have minor children, because I talk about is at some length some special planning I do for families that have minor children. Now, the webinars go through what is estate planning, my own estate planning process as an attorney, also outlines a number of concepts, what we're trying to plan for and what we're trying to avoid, and then outlines the different levels of planning that I offer in my practice and the different fees that are for those different levels of planning. At the end of the webinar, if you decide that Bob is the guy to prepare your estate plan for you, follow the instructions or go back to the page of my website where you started, and you can book a preliminary planning session for the purpose of meeting with me to decide what level of planning you would like me to do for you and your family. Now, I'm encouraging people to get educated first with one of my webinars before coming in and talking to me about doing planning. In the past, I'll be very blunt, in the past, I did a lot of consultations where I spent hours and hours and hours every month explaining the same concepts over and over and over. And the end result was many people, after all that, would say, "Thank you for the education, Bob, but we've decided we're going to use somebody else, or we have to think about it, or, oh, we expected it to be a heck of a lot less than what I actually charge." So I would rather people go through the education process, get educated, and then decide whether or not at the end of that webinar, whether they can see the value in working with somebody like me with 40 plus years of experience, who's board certified in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the State Bar of California Board of Legal Specialization, and whether I'm the right person to work with to do the plan. I have a very specific way I approach the planning process. I expect my clients to put in time in the planning process, not have things spoon-fed to them, not be led around by the hand. We're all adults here, and I think adults should take responsibility for things that are important, like these things are important. So if you believe that spending as much time working on planning the estate for you and your family as you would in planning a family vacation makes sense, then I might be a good fit for you. If you want to just go to some website somewhere and fill out some forms and have it spit back a generic plan to you, I'm not a good fit for you. And I would prefer you just not contact me in the first place. I think that's fair, right? I'm willing to work very hard to put together a customized plan for each and every one of my clients, and I ask that you put in a similar effort to me to make sure that it's the best plan possible for you and your family. So we're coming up on the mid-show break, and when we come back, I will go into the segment called Questions and Comments, where I cover a number of real-life situations from around the state and then comment on them. So when we come back after the break, this is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and we'll continue in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the third segment of our show today. I just got a little bit of information about my prior show, and I found out from Mike, who is the engineer working with me today. He went back and looked at my podcast from the prior show and informed me that my last show back in March had 550 downloads.
Ooh.
Yeah, ooh, right. Thank you, Mike. I didn't realize that I even had 550 listeners, let alone that people would download my last show. Well, if you're one of those 550, Bob's back, baby. So I'm here, and as you can tell, I try to keep things a little bit light. Thank you, round of applause. There you go. And that Mike will do that. Don't be surprised, and Mike probably has this queued up already. Don't be surprised if my old buddy Chewbacca shows up at some point. There he is. Hey, Chewie, good to hear from you. It's been several months now, but good to have you back. Okay. All right, Chewie, come on. Still my show, okay? So let's go to my segment, a regular segment from a prior show that I'm going to be continuing in this show as well going forward, and that's questions and comments from around the state. So what I do is I pull legal situations that people post and ask for advice on, and I kind of let you know what they are, and then I come back and I comment on them. Maybe even give legal insights, sometimes possible solutions. And who knows, maybe if someone's listening, they might go, hey, I posted that. That helps me. So here's one out of Oroville, California. Person said, the trustee's name is spelled wrong on my dad's living trust. Both he and the successor trustee have passed away. The banks will not accept the trust because of the wrong name and because the successor trustee has passed away. Well, they can't accept the trust because if that's the case and there's no one named after that person, the trust has no trustee right now. When the trust has no trustee, some kind of action has to be taken in order to have a new trustee put in charge. Now, some trusts, such as the ones I draft, would enable the beneficiaries of the trust to appoint a new trustee if there's no named trustee that's alive or available anymore. Barring that, you probably have to go to court in the county where the trust is located and have the court appoint a new trustee for the trust. That could be done by any one of the beneficiaries, adult beneficiaries, petitioning the court for that, maybe even petitioning the court to be named as the trustee themselves. But it's going to take some kind of court action if the trust does not provide a written mechanism for appointing a successor trustee. So the bank really can't do anything until a valid trustee can be presented to them. So that's a problem. If these people were near me, I could assist them by going to court and filing a 17-200 petition under the probate code, section 17-200, to have a successor trustee appointed by the court so someone was in charge of the dad's trust so that he could start handling bank accounts and real estate and whatever else was involved. That is something I do, by the way. In the final segment of the show today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the kind of court petitions that I do involving trusts. Now, out of Sacramento, California, someone asked the question, when applying for a special needs trust employee identification number or tax identification number, EIN or TIN, what should the name be listed as? So it says, my mother had an irrevocable trust and I'm the trustee. Within her trust is my brother's special needs trust. How should I name the EIN for the bank account that will hold the special needs funds that I administer. Well, if the trust doesn't give a specific name to call it, I would probably call it, let's say the brothers John Smith, I would call it the John Smith Special Needs Trust, dated the date that Mom's original trust was established, because that's when the Special Needs Trust was identified, was at that time. Now, just a point of order, when I do trusts for people set up by people for their children or others, I don't call them special needs trusts. I call them supplemental needs trusts. And the reason for that is more than just semantics. Technically, a special needs trust in California is one set up for the benefit of a special needs person using their own property, things that they own directly. It's called a special needs trust because when you do that, set it up that way, the trust has to have a recovery right given to the state of California to recover any monies paid out for the benefit of that special needs person because it was their own property. You can set up a special needs trust and you can qualify for government benefits, even with a lot of assets. But the first ones in line to get paid back are the government entities that paid out monies for you. If you're setting up a trust for a special needs person with your own money for the benefit of that other person, that's really a supplemental needs trust. And that kind of trust has no recovery right from government entities that paid money on behalf of the special needs person. So it's a little more than just a semantic game, and and what it does is, if you call it a special needs trust when it's really a supplemental needs trust, then the State Department here in California that handles these things like Medi-Cal benefits and all that, they're going to look at special needs in the name and assume it's a trust where they have a recovery right. And that can cause confusion with the government agency when they think the trust says something it doesn't say, because it really doesn't say that. If you say supplemental needs trust, it's clear that it's intended to supplement whatever monies or services someone receives from the state and not replace those monies and services, like Medi-Cal for health insurance, SSI for income, Section 8 housing for a place to live. All those kinds of things are needs-based government programs, and a supplemental needs trust is not supposed to interfere with those needs-based programs. So it's a little more than semantics there. Okay, let's see. Okay, that's pretty much the same question there. Still pretty much the same question there. Sometimes I wade through here. Okay. This is something that probably happens quite a bit. Oakland, California. I received an unexpected check made out to my deceased father from his life insurance company. I'm his executor and trustee of his trust. All his bank accounts are now closed. It's a check that reimburses a small amount, less than $10,000, they neglected to pay out from the policy liquidation. They're refusing to reissue the check in my name, even though they have documentation naming me the executor. Can I force them to issue the check in my name? Answer, no. Not if it's payable to your father's estate. Says, I don't want to do a small estate affidavit because I live outside of California where my father passed away. I don't want to travel to California. Well, you can do a small estate affidavit. You don't have to be in California to do one. You just have to qualify. A small estate affidavit basically says, this person died with property owing to them or in their name or payable to their estate, and the total value is less than $184,500. Very specific dollar amount. So less than $10,000 would qualify. If this person's named as the father's executor, and there's a will that says turn everything over to his father's trust, he could do the small estate affidavit anywhere in the world. And all he needs is a certified copy of his father's death certificate, and then identifying what the asset is. And it's a pretty straightforward procedure. So you don't have to come into California to do that. It can be done from anywhere else. And I've had a number of clients over the years that had people taking over that lived in other states. And that's perfectly fine. So the person's on the right track. Hopefully, they will come back and they will look more deeply into it and realize, oh, I can actually do this after all. I don't need to live in California or travel to California to do it. I can just do it in the state where I live, or for that matter, in the country where I live. It's not limited to just the state of California. There's just a form you fill out and you turn it in. We're coming up on the end of the third segment of the show today, and when we come back, I'm going to explain the types of court petitions that I do regularly involving trusts and how I can help people throughout the state of California with these if conditions are met. This is attorney Bob Bergman, and I'll see you on the other side of this break.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
And welcome back to the final segment of our show today. I told you before the break that I was going to tell you about the types of court work that I do as an attorney. Besides doing probate work, which to me is like watching paint dry, it's not fun at all. In fact, I'm considering discontinuing doing probate work of all kind, like actual probates of wills and things like that. But the other thing I do quite a bit of are two special types of court petitions. And one of them I call the Hegstad petition. That's Heggstad, rather. You could go to hegstadhelp.com and learn more about that. And then the other is a trust modification petition. So the Hegstad petition is under probate code section 850 and 17200. And the trust modification petition is under probate code section 15403 and 17200. The trust modification petition is used if someone has a trust that is irrevocable and they want to make a change to it. Now, the most common one is where a married couple did a joint trust years ago. The trust provided that on the death of the first spouse, that everything was divided into two or more pieces, with a piece going to the surviving spouse that was their own, and the piece of the deceased spouse going into a trust, often called a B-trust or bypass trust or exemption trust or credit shelter trust, a lot of different names for what was basically an irrevocable trust designed to take the share of the spouse that died and use up federal estate tax exclusion so that when the survivor died, the family did not pay estate tax on whatever was in the B trust or bypass trust. Now, those were commonplace back in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s for many years. But then the law started changing. They started increasing the exclusion from the estate tax of estates. Right now, it's over $13 million per person dying, which, of course, is quite a bit more. And the bottom line was, because the law started changing, those older-style trusts were often overkill for a family. So I go to court with the consent of all of the remainder beneficiaries, typically the children, and we modify the original trust after one parent has died to get rid of the requirement that things be divided. Other things might be to insert into a trust a supplemental needs trust for a beneficiary who became incapacitated after the trust was created and now is receiving government benefits, and they don't want to lose their benefits or be forced to take their inheritance and put it into a special needs trust. So there's a lot of reasons why we want to modify a trust in order to take advantage of some tax rules or to have a trust that is better in line with modern trusts and will be better for the family overall because of things that have been added in maybe that weren't there or things that are removed that either don't make sense anymore or actually cause problems. Now, the other type of petition, the Hegstat petition, that is used when someone dies with a trust, most commonly dies with a trust, and they have one or more assets that they own or are payable to their estate, and we want to get those into the trust without going through the whole probate process. The key there is you have to have some written evidence that the person intended that asset to be part of their trust. The most common thing I see is someone buys a new house, they neglect to put the title in the name of their trust, or they refinance their property, the lender makes them take it out of their trust, put the new loan on, and they neglect to put it back in. In a case like that, the evidence of intent is pretty clear. It was already in the trust if it was taken out for a refinance. And often, hopefully, it's listed on a schedule of assets of the trust as being an asset of the trust. And that's a written schedule, hopefully also dated and signed. That's even more powerful. Or there's a general assignment of assets that covers the category of asset, like bank account, brokerage account, real property. I mean, the plans that I do have both a schedule of assets, a general assignment of assets that even includes retirement plans and insurance and annuities where there's a failure of beneficiaries, meaning that the beneficiaries named don't survive. They don't survive the person that owns the account. That will typically mean that those monies end up getting paid to the person's probate estate. And that's something we generally don't want to have happen. But I go to court on a regular basis with these Hegstat petitions and modification petitions to fix broken trusts and also to get loose assets into someone's trust without going through the full probate process. Now, I have HegstatHelp.com is my website for the Hegstat petitions. The other one is irrevocabletrustdoctor.com. That's irrevocabletrustdoctor, all one word, .com. So that's it for this week, and we'll see you next week. This is attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio. Have a great week, Bay Area.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.
three-star general, Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.